So we're going to go to the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline and bring in our guest.
Master gardener, horticultural educator, media expert, and all-around great guy. On various media platforms, he explains how to grow sustainably and have gardening success through TV, radio, print, presentations, and workshops. He uses gardening and greening to inspire people to get out and grow.
William Moss, welcome to the program. And thank you for taking time to join us and our listeners and educating all of us with some of your garden wisdom.
Oh, man, well, thanks for having me, as always. It's always good to hear you guys and be with you guys. So, spring starting. Let's get going.
What is a degraded forest? You put this up on YouTube the other day. You and a group of people with cleaning out, I guess, what you call trash trees. What is the importance of taking care or cleaning one up if you have it in your backyard? Because wouldn't nature just take care of itself? What's the significance here?
Well, see, you would hope that's the case, but that's just not the way it works, especially in suburban or urban areas. Nature sometimes gets off kilter. So you have trees that are very invasive, box elders that are not native and cause a lot of damage to natural habitat. Not box elders, buckthorn, even native box elders do the same thing. Honeysuckles, privets, a lot of those bad plants can get in there and they'll completely change the habitat. They'll block out not only your good plants, but they spread into the woods and adjacent areas and just make everything look tangled, overgrown. Not what it should be. Not enough openness to have the wildflowers and to have the animals come through. So what you should do is clear everything out. You should clear out all the overgrowth, all the tangled stuff that kind of looks like a big hedge a lot of time in people's yards in the summer, so they leave it. You know, it's like a big tangled mass, and they think that's what nature's supposed to be. But actually, it should be much more open. So if you don't know what's bad and what's good, I suggest you get in touch with the Botanic Garden locally around your area or the Cooperative Extension Service. Well, we've got a really good landscape service that you trust. You can talk to them and ask them, you know, is this tree native? What is it doing to the yard? What is this clump of shrubbery in the back doing? So it's not simple to do, so it's hard for me to put it in a few words. But if you can clear the stuff out, you'll notice a tremendous difference in your area, and then you'll be able to bring in plants that you love.
Right, and some of these trees that you're talking about are not native to North America. They are, well, they're an invasive species, and that's kind of somewhat of the reason why we're wanting to remove them.
Yes, especially things like buckthorn, which is really aggressive and shading things out. There's also honeysuckle that does this a lot, multiflora rose. You can find a lot with privet. Even burning bushes are not considered to be invasive in many areas. So if you can get those out, you can get a lot of other cool things in. You know, I'm a proponent. I just wrote an article about this coming out soon in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. I'm a huge proponent of replacing those trees with small fruit trees. If you don't need a big tree, you throw in things like a cherry tree or like a beech plum. Really cool native things that provides fruit for you and wildlife, but also keep things open and beautiful. So that makes sense. You know, I'm rambling on because I'm excited. I'm more than arboretum this morning, guys. I'm about to teach a class on vegetables, so I'm kind of rambling. So lay me in if you need to.
Okay, that's great information. Now, a lot of people say they want to garden. They always fail. They're more of a plant killer than a plant grower. What are some things these people can do to become better plant growers?
Okay, first thing is just experiment. You know, don't always think of everything as, oh, if I don't do this, I failed. Actually, what you did is you learned the lesson. So at least now you know what not to do next time. So don't think that if it dies, it's always your fault. Sometimes it may have been the plant's fault or just not a good match. Ask the people at the garden center where you're going to buy your plant. Ask them, you know, what plant fits my site? And just keep trying. The more you do this, the better you get at it. And also for people who really think, oh, I can't grow anything, I have a completely dead thumb, well then get you some seeds. Seeds are cheap. You can try several things. You can spread them out and try them, and that way you haven't invested much money into it, and you get a chance to see how plants grow all the way from seed to harvest or from seed to flower, whatever you're picking out. And just being there in that process and going through it, sticking with it through the whole season will teach you so much. So experience is the best teacher when it comes to gardening, and failure is a big part of that experience. So don't look at it as being negative. It's just part of the journey.
Well, we had Shauna Coronado on the program a couple of years ago, and you're familiar with her, and she said you're not a good gardener unless you've killed about 1,000 plants. So,
Well, let's up that, because we were talking yesterday with some people from Morton Arbor Reading, where I'm at, and I was saying that there's nobody that's killed more plants than me. I will take the claim to that.
Well, William, what are some of your favorite vegetables to grow? I know that okra is one of them. You've encouraged us to grow that here, and we were successful with that here in Zone 5 in the Milwaukee area. What are some that you enjoy growing that you're like your go-tos that may be, you know, uncommon to others?
So, with by that this morning, my number one actually is the Mossy Award winner of the year as performance is cheese pumpkin. I just love to grow the plant because it covers summer through fall with so many changes. First, you have these big, beautiful leaves, and then cheese pumpkins, the leaves are mottled. So you have these beautiful pumpkin leaves that have mottled colors and markings all along them. They can be as wide as a dinner plate, bigger than a charger. And then you have the flowers that come out, and the flowers can be 6 to 8 inches tall. Now, some people eat the flowers. I recommend only eating the males, because the females produce pumpkins, which start to develop right after that. And then you have these big, huge pumpkins that you can harvest all through late summer, going through fall into the frost. And cheese pumpkins are actually butternut squash that are flattened out. So they're not like jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. So it's like a big, squat butternut squash. And it'll keep for like 2 years if you keep it in the right conditions. And it's delicious. We make these beautiful pies out of them. And I'm telling you, Joey, if you can taste these cheese pumpkin muffins, you'll be a convert too. So cheese pumpkins are my favorite vegetable to grow that most people don't grow.
Awesome. Now, just want to let everyone know we're talking with Master Gardener, horticultural educator, media expert William Moss. What are some of your major no-nos you see gardeners do early in the spring that they should not be doing?
Well, a long time ago, I used to till my garden up, and I found from experience that the more you till, the more weeds you'll have that year. And also, you destroy the soil structure. Lots of plants, especially a lot of the greens that we grow, the broccolis and even the okra, like a natural soil structure. So I'd say that tilling is probably one of the biggest mistakes that I see people do. Now, if you're a new gardener in a new space, I understand. But if you've been gardening in that same space for a few years, rather than tilling, I'd much rather do like you guys do and just put down compost on top of the beds. And now you can pull that compost back when you plant your seeds, but killing it just exposes so many weed seeds. That's probably the biggest mistake they make. And then over-fertilization. I see it all the time. You don't need to fertilize so much in the beginning, and then people forget to switch over and use less nitrogen in the summertime when trying to flower. You know, you want to use heavy nitrogen early, if you want to use it at all, you know, for the plants to get green, but once they start their flowering and fruiting stage, you can ease back on that. And that's one of the reasons people have a lot of pests, especially in the late summer, because they're over-fertilizing, and the aphids seek out that nitrogen. All that extra nitrogen you give in the plant, all that rank growth is coming up, it's just calling aphids to it. So over-fertilization, tilling are probably the two biggest things that I see in the early spring.
Now, we get this question. I see this question a lot on garden platforms or Facebook. I want to build raised beds, but I want to do it as cheaply as possible. Now, William, you know, just like we know, you get what you pay for. What is the best way that people can put a raised bed in, but do it affordably? But when people say cheap, I'm thinking they're not going to have a good result at the end if they go the cheap route.
I think so too. And you know, I've seen photos of you guys' beds, and you know, your beds are nice. And sometimes you got to put a little more into it to get out what you want. So if you're trying to do it for like under $20 or under $30, you can get a kit. But those kits are usually smaller and sometimes flimsy. I find the best way to do it is if you're going to stay low, is you do it with cinder block, or if you're a builder or like to play with tools like I do, you can build it, and I choose 4x6 wood. You can build a 6-inch bed with just 4x6x8 long posts. So for a cost of one post may cost, I think, $15. So for like $45-$50, you can build a 6-inch high bed. It's going to be 4 foot long and 8 feet wide. So you can have a nice size bed fairly cheap, but then you got to have the tools to build. It's not a kit. Like I said, you can get the kits, but they're not as good as building this yourself. I always prefer to build a raised bed because they last so much longer. Let me just tell you a story. I built raised beds for my mother-in-law's house. I call her my mom in Chicago back in 1998 out of three boards. They're still there today. Still sturdy, still producing sunchokes, just like you guys, sunchokes, still producing carrots and tomatoes. So if you build it out of the right material, it actually will be cheap because it'll last longer and you won't have to replace it.
Right, just like anything in life, you put the investment in, you do it right with the right materials, and the reward will continue to pay you back year after year.
Let me address the materials really quick.
Yes, go ahead.
Some people are concerned about what chemicals may be inside of the wood. Everything that's currently being used has been approved by the FDA. Now, you take that with a grain of salt because that's things that happened before. So if you really want to be sure that the wood you have isn't going to leach any sort of chemicals, look for either some sort of sustained grown wood that has not been treated or go with cedar. And because cedar does not have to be treated and it won't leach any chemicals into the soil because they don't have to treat it with any chemicals. So those are the two types of boards where if you want to be sure there's nothing coming into it. But all wood now that's slated for outdoor use is supposedly safe.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we really have enjoyed having you on the program. How can we find out more about you and where to find you?
Well, you can always go to getoutandgrow.org. Right now, we love people to come and sign up and register for the mailing list. And join me next week. I'll be down at Chicago Flower Garden Show all week doing their potting parties four times a day. I love people to come down. We have a new theme this year where we're telling stories with our pots and we're planting perennials that are going to last from year to year. And so people will have a little patch of their garden to tell a story about. Also on Facebook, you guys are Facebook superstars. I'm trying to get into it myself, so check me out on Facebook at William Moss TV or either at Get Out and Grow.
Well, William, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us and educate Holly, myself, and all of our listeners about more gardening information than what we're able to cover on the program.
Thank you guys so much. I look forward to coming back and chatting with you.
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.